SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
Absolutely glorious now here at Santa Anita. The only thing missing is Johnny D in person, but we got him here instead via the magic of the telephone. Johnny, good morning.
Stevie, I'm glad you're having a wonderful trip. Sounds like you're having a great time, and the racing hasn't been bad either, so those are all good things.
True. Saturday was a great tonic for everything that kind of led up to it. Say good morning to your man, Hammer.
Hammer, how are you, sir?
Great, fantastic. Not as good as you guys back there with the Bryce Harper going on. I'm sure you're still jumping up and down, but the Dodgers aren't doing it. In fact, we had a Tommy Lasorda lookalike just walk by here about 10 minutes ago. What's going on here? But, yeah, everything's great. Got me out of the my normal. I've been sleeping in a little bit lately until Vic comes to town. You got to get up at the crack at 4 o'clock in the morning to get out here with him. But it's been great. But like you said, it's been nice to see you out here in your normal spots.
Well, you're living large now, and if you want to find out if that's a Lasorda lookalike or if it's actually Tommy Lasorda, go take a knife and cut his veins open. If it's red blood, it's not him. Because Lasorda bleeds Dodger blue.
But I'm
yes, he does. Actually, but just thought about it because they did have a picture of him not too long ago, sitting in the, third row above the dugout there, jumping up and down. He's ageless, timeless, and an LA treat, that's for sure.
You know, when the Phillies were the year they won the World Series was at 08, I believe. Hard to believe it was that long ago, but I guess it was. We were at the game, and we had these fantastic seats. They were playing the Dodgers in the playoffs. And sitting directly in front of me, was Mary Hart, who's a big Dodger fan. And then Lasorda was off to the side. And then just in front of us, in front of my friend Will's son, was Sandy Koufax. So I told my Will's son, who's probably at that time, probably was 12, 13. I said, look at that. I said, Sandy Koufax. And he kind of nodded at me and half smiled. And I said, you don't even know who the hell that is, do you? and he shook his head, no. I said, well, you get on that internet of yours and you look up this guy's record and find out that's a real baseball pitcher there. So I saw him recently, and I finally asked him, I said, did you ever look up Sandy Koufax? He said, man, what a pitch. I said, yeah, okay.
I love it.
I digress.
Well, Johnny, we had a weekend that really it's going to take a couple of days to absorb. And, you probably saw how many? 25 big caps and derbies?
Yeah. Well, more than that. Yeah. I've got 40 years of working in racing. And I was going to Santa Anita before then. So I've seen them all. 40 something big caps.
Wow.
It's a great race. Certainly has been diminished in importance by the events that have surrounded it over the years. It's kind of, lost a bit of its status, but it's still, for someone like and someone that's been around California, the big cap is still a race you want to win. And it was so great to see it. These are talented horses that ran Saturday. So, they can go anywhere and win.
It's a good year to have a nice horse early in the year. I mean, an older handicap type horse, because as you know, Johnny, there's a lot of spots out there, and these these might be the top two right now. So they can go anywhere. They're going to pick up a lot of cash on the way out the door here.
Well, you know, look, I mean, you look at last year, and the Breeders' Cup winner came from out west at Santa Anita, and that happens a lot. They seem to win a lot of Breeders' Cups. It's like if you race on the dirt in California and you ship somewhere else, you're always live. You're always live. I don't care if it's a sprint, if it's a route, it doesn't matter. California horses at the top end are the best in the country. I believe that. I really do. It's
been that way for 100 years, and now the Breeders' Cup scenario as it stands, with the Breeders' Cup going to be here at Santa Anita, and these guys, you know, this is their home. They don't need to venture too far away if they're planning on, you know, ending here in November. You got the Gold Cup here. It's another mile and a quarter race. You can do something in between, but then, of course, you know, you got the Pacific Classic in there too. So there might be room for a trip or two, but the beauty of it is for them, they don't need to go anywhere.
Yeah, they're all home games from here through early November. And, you know, the Santa Anita Handicap, what's happened to it is Dubai really was the first. Ding to the Santa Anita Handicap. Horses started to look at that big purse money in Dubai, started to chase that, and that started to diminish what you'd have for the Santa Anita Handicap, because many times there'd be two or three Southern California horses in the Dubai World Cup, and they would detract from the Santa Anita Handicap. And this year, McKenzie could have gone over there, but after thought about it, he said, "Nah, I'm going to wait another year." I think he thought he would be able to take the big cap this year, and certainly McKenzie ran well and lost by the slimmest of noses to Giftbox. But you've got the Pegasus World Cup has now kind of become the swan song. You get that one kind of on your way out the door, so to speak.
Yeah, it was the top of the Oreo. There's no doubt about it. Sandwiched in between a $10 million race and a $12, $15, $16 million race, you really have no chance. And so I think last year when I was still here, I was quoted as saying, well, we're going to move this thing and let's try to. And when you sat down and looked, there really was no other place to move it. And so just left it as it was and have the Santa Anita Handicap Day in March. And as it turns out, we had one in April. I can never understand. Before the Pegasus, Johnny, this used to be run. It was the first Saturday in March. And now think back to not that long ago. This meet used to end in mid. This would be closing weekend, pretty much, for Santa Anita before they went to Hollywood Park. So that's why it was run in early March. And couldn't understand with the Dubai Festival and World Cup going on at the end of March. It was three, sometimes 4 weeks from the big cap to the Dubai race, but nobody ever prepped in the big cap. I couldn't figure it out. And then once the meet got extended, said, you know what, let's just move the big cap a week later into the meet because it doesn't matter. If they're going to go, they're going to go. And if they're going to stay, they're going to stay. But no, the big cap has definitely lost a little bit of its luster with those two races. But as you said, if there's one race in California that you want to win as an owner or a trainer or a jock, put it that way, it's the Santa Anita Handicap, no doubt about it.
Well, for Sadler, for who's local, it meant the world, last year when Accelerate won. And, in fact, I unearthed a terrific chestnut. Johnny, Hammer, did you see it too, the tweet I put out yesterday morning?
No.
Johnny, did you see that little historical note?
I don't know. I see a lot of historical notes. I don't know. You have to tell me what it is.
It occurred to me yesterday morning as I was, waiting for figures to be released, and because I come to be the guy that posts the big stake buyers Sunday mornings, and it occurred to me, even though there's been plenty of trainers and even owners that have had repeat wins in the big cap, I wondered who the last or if anybody had won back-to-back big caps with different horses? And the answer was yes. And the answer, you know, the obvious, you know, names that you think about, you know,
well,
like
wait, let me give, wait. Let me give you two. I want to give you Whittingham, and I'm going to give you Baffert.
Neither. They won with the same. They won with the same horse.
They might not even been born when it happened. No,
you got it, Hammer. Hammer's on to this. Well, Whittingham was born.
Yeah.
Baffert wasn't. You got to go back to 1939 and 1940. Charles Howard and Tom Smith with Kayak 2 and Seabiscuit.
Okay.
Right. How about that?
That is something. That is
right.
Something. And now Sadler's done that.
And Costa Aronis. Obviously a historic achievement when you're going back to 39-40.
It's such that, you know, we can talk about how it's, you know, kind of lost a little bit of its luster, but it'll never lose its history. That's something you can't take away from the big cap. And
absolutely,
history is so important in these races. It's important to the jockeys. It's important to the trainers and the fans. History is really means something. And someone posted a racing program for Big Cap Day in, I think it was 76.
1976.
Did you see it?
I sure did.
Hammer showed it to me.
Oh, and what I noticed, they were talking about the jocks in the race and the horses and the trick. But what I noticed was, I think Whittingham had four horses in there. So it made me laugh because I think about, you know, we talk about guys dominating races now, trainers having all the horses. Charlie had all the horses back then. Yes. And you know what's funny back then? Hammer, you'll know this. Whittingham would bring in a horse from Europe, and he was one of the originals to bring in on a regular basis to bring horses from Europe. And they would come over, and they had run in group stakes over there, and they would come over, and they'd still have non-winners other than conditions. And at that back then, you could run a horse, non-winners one, non-winners two, non-winners three, and those races filled, and they went. And they're mostly grass horses, obviously. And he'd win all those races with those European horses.
I remember, and the ones that were full of, that have already proven themselves, they'd come over here, they'd be off 6 months, you didn't know anything. And what I'd finally picked on up on, because I was just getting around then, coming out to the track, they would run a clunker, right? And, you know, next time out, you throw the line for it. Well, guess what? When it came time for the money, Shoemaker would end up on this horse, and you're going, what's going on? How come he's on this? Boom, and they would air time after time again. But, you know, you mentioned that race. I did look back. He did have four in, and what's pretty wild, that was we talked about the Royal Glint ancient title battle, and he had four of them in there, two of them fillies. Not too bad. Dahlia and Dulcia, the two fillies he had. Yeah, not too bad. Let's just throw them in the big cap. Because if you remember that Dulcia, the time before, had won that one-shot race they had out here, the national world thoroughbred championship. Yeah, at Oaktree, right. Yeah, she beat Royal Glint in that one. But anyway, it was kind of a throwback for me because Royal Glint was one of my favorites as an ancient title. Anybody that grew up in racing here during that era, ancient title was, I mean, just a legend, and he still is. Just undefeated at 7 furlongs. He won on the grass. He won 1.25 miles. He went back and won the Whitney. He won everything he could possibly have. He was just a total fighter. And actually ran in the big cap twice and ran second twice. But anyway, now we're going back to 76. But
one of the great things that normally happens on Big Cap Day is that they show replays of, you know, previous big caps. And that's always, you know, great fun. When you watch those ancient ones, like probably from Seabiscuit time, you notice, the amount of dust that was kicked up on the racetrack—it looks like smoke.
It's like a, look like a John Wayne movie going through the desert, like a chasing a posse.
Which kind of cracks me up, you know, when people talk about, you know, racing surfaces, and you look at that, you say, oh my God, what were they running on then? Anyway, this was an exciting addition. Goes down in the books. It has to be one of the closest ever, because, you know, it was really tough to call live. And these are two good horses, and hopefully, Hammer, they both stay home, and they develop a rivalry and lead up to the Breeders' Cup. We could use a good rivalry.
Yes, we could, especially in the older division. And, you know, we always look, I know you do the same thing when we start getting into the later part of the year. Okay, which of these three-year-olds are, A, going to not go to the shed, going to be around, good enough to compete with the older division in the next year? And, you know, there wasn't a lot left over from last year. So, you know, McKenzie obviously won. Great Gift Box is older. But, you know, right now, they're probably on top of the list. Nothing comes to my mind right now that stands out above them.
No, I think that race, and you know, if you want to parlay over to the Santa Anita Derby, I think that race also, I think those two guys are pretty much at the top of the class at this point. I really thought that, you know, California this weekend, there were some really good races. There were some really good races,
Johnny. Some thoughts. You know, we kind of ran through the results, and of course, Bellafina was going to be impossible, really, to beat with that cast, and she overwhelmed that group. Talk about the things that struck you as the day went on. Then, of course, mid card, we had Baffert run 1-2 and. Then in half an hour later, Simon Callahan with a surprising 1-2 in the Providencia. What did you come away with from Saturday?
Well, I think with Bellafina, if you're ever trying to teach someone about handicapping, and you're trying to explain class to them, and they're not really getting it, I think you can drop that video, cue that video up. And just show them this is what class is, and this is what dominance is, and it's also how the, you know, this is what the fastest horse does in a race. So, you know, you can really just show she was wide the whole way. Nothing mattered. She just dominated the field. So it's going to be interesting to see her take that forward, you know, into Kentucky. And you know, the Balthus victory in the seventh race, one bad boy, Rosario. Right now, I don't know, Richard Balthus, he's really emerged as a serious force in California. You've got to, if you're handicapping races, you've got to stop at every one of his horses and really take a long look at it, because he's really become... He's become tough, really tough. The Santa Anita Derby was, I think, as good as the rest of the card was. I found that to be the most interesting race from my perspective, because you had Game Winner in there, who we all know his qualities, the two-year-old champ. You figured he might be a bit wide on the first turn. Little did you know that he'd be four wide about the whole way around. But I was amazed at the ride on Roadster by Mike Smith. And that's really what struck me the most about the race, is down the backside, when Game Winner makes a somewhat early move, he's four wide, and I think Joel Rosario decides, look, let me just move up on these guys because I'm going to outfinish him. Game Winner doesn't have real speed, but he kind of grinds it along the whole way. He goes like that steady pace. And I think Rosario thought, let me get up here. Somebody will drop out of this pack inside me, and then I'll only be maybe two wide, three wide on the final turn. Well, everyone stayed battling. Instagram refused to go away until late in the stretch. He ran a tough race. But at that point down the backstretch, when everyone's moving, when the front horses are moving, Smith actually allows Roadster to just kind of settle into his stride. He doesn't ask Roadster to run at that point. He doesn't panic, Smith, meaning Smith. He just sits there and allows this horse to gather himself. Now, when a jockey makes that kind of move in a huge race, where points to get in the Kentucky Derby are on the line, and there's $1 million purse, for a jockey to be that cool and that confident, you know, that's why he's Big Money Mike. It's not by accident. You know, people say, oh, if this jock got the same mouth as that jock, he wins it. Not exactly. They do different things. And him having the confidence and the coolness, confidence in his horse, confidence in himself to wait and save the ground around the turn, angle out, and let this horse do his thing in the stretch. Where he runs down Game Winner, and a Game Winner was busy putting away Instagram on the inside. Maybe he's looking around. From my point of view, you're not supposed to lose from there. Not at Santa Anita, not trained by Bob Baffert, not two-year-old champ. You're not supposed to lose from there. Roadster ran him down. He actually leveled out. He fired huge in the stretch. He ran down the two-year-old champ and beat him. And I just thought it was a great performance by horse and rider. Certainly Baffert has been high on this horse all along, since before he ran the first time. And the throat surgery. This horse is finally showing his talent. And I thought to myself, you know, that's why they call this guy Big Money Mike, because he just stays cool. And he waited. He saved all the ground. He waited to angle out. Let them go ahead and bang their heads together. And I'm just going to sit here and let my horse get his feet under him. And I know when I ask him, he's going to give it to me. And he did. I thought it was the strongest of the preps this weekend.
Absolutely. I mean, do you think 1-2, if you had to forget the Arkansas Derby, 1-2 choices right now? Probably?
Well, for me, they would be.
Right.
What I find really interesting about this Kentucky Derby as it starts to unfold now, we're a couple weeks out, and we still got one more prep race that we can't ignore. But what I find interesting, and I mentioned this, I think, a week or two ago, it's totally different this year. I don't see that, you know, that controlling speed, kind of high cruising speed horse that we've seen the last couple years that's been deadly or in the Derby. That closer from out of the clouds, or even closers from mid-pack, we haven't seen too many of those lately. Maybe it's the points, the way the sprinters are kept out, whatever. But there's been fast paces. It's not like we haven't had legitimate pace in the Derby. We certainly have. I think last year's pace with Justify was, you know, one of the quickest ever. Not the quickest, but one of the quickest ever. So it's not that. It's just that we've had horses that have had that high cruising speed. I don't see that horse this year. And for that reason, you know, these closers, I think they're going to have a real hard time in Kentucky. I see a lot of stalkers. I see a lot of horses that want to be, you know, mid-pack. And, you know, you've got a Vekoma who's close to the pace, but he's not a speed horse. I wouldn't call him a speed horse. I wouldn't say he's got a high cruising speed. Maximum Security.
Yeah.
he's about the only one I see with that kind of early speed. Now, people say, well, he walked the other day in the Express Bet Florida Derby. Yeah, he did, but it was because he could. But he can also motor, because we've seen him in sprint races motor. So, now, can he motor for a mile and a quarter? I don't know. There's still a question of his quality, but he sure is fast enough. That's up in the air. But I don't see that high cruising speed horse that can just kind of get out there and either sit behind one other horse or take the lead himself and dominate the race. I don't see that this year. I don't see it. And for that reason also, I think the first turn this year is going to become a rodeo again. It's been nice for the last couple of years, but I think because you have so many horses that kind of want to be in the same place, you know, the draw is going to be important. The how they break is going to be important. And that first turn is going to be important because some guys are going to get stuck wide. And some guys are going to get caught, you know, in spaces they don't want to be in. So I think this year's Derby is just incredibly interesting.
Now, and you know, one thing that I brought this up actually yesterday with Seth Merrow, and when Baffert joins us in the next hour, we'll ask him directly, because he brought up Gary and Mary West, and you know they're two horses, Maximum Security and Game Winner, and Baffert made a specific point to the assembled media about how seriously Maximum Security needs to be taken on the front end. And certainly, you know, as somebody that, you know, that understands that style and what it brings to, you know, a race like Derby or any other, you know, big stake, I thought it was really notable that he brought it up unprovoked. So I thought that, right away, that struck me that he thinks Maximum Security, for all the reasons you just laid out, Johnny, could be a real danger. And you know, didn't we bring up War Emblem last week as you know as a parallel?
Yeah, and with War Emblem, something else critical happened with War Emblem. He went from a guy at Arlington it doesn't matter. He went from somebody else to Bob Baffert. And that makes a difference, you know. And Baffert didn't have him that long.
Like 3 weeks, I'm thinking, right?
Yeah, it was a short time. Because I remember in his tack room, Baffert was asking me some questions about this horse. And we were talking about him. And he said, you know, this horse can really run. He said, I mean really run. And so in that short little time, he changed some equipment. He did some things, I think, that just brought out the natural talent that War Emblem had, that natural speed. And, yes, he's afraid of Maximum Security because, you know, Bob comes from the quarter horse world, and I think he really understands that how dangerous speed is. Speed, you know, early speed. And if you can carry your speed, wow, you become dangerous because you take out. And when you watch races, you see Baffert horses. He always emphasizes the break, and then they're usually, if they break well, they're usually on or close to the lead, which is again why this year is so different, because he's got so far a Game Winner and Roadster, who are not speed horses, which is very different from his usual operation, his method usually. So he understands how dangerous getting to the lead is, or putting yourself in a perfect position. You know, it takes out so many variables. You're not pace dependent. You don't have to worry about being wide. You don't have to worry about traffic. Your horse is not eating dirt. I mean, it just takes everything, takes all those things out of the mix. If you've got enough speed to get up there and carry it. So that's why he fears maximum security, and I don't blame them. I look at the race. Where's the speed? Now, there are horses that run close to the lead, but there's nobody nobody asserts themselves, imposes their will on the field. Here I am. You're going to have to come get me, you know, to take me down. Maximum security, kind of the only one. And I think there's still questions out about him. Maybe not certainly not as many as before the Express Bet Florida Derby. And that was like a perfect race for him. I mean, if you could draw up a prep race for your horse to enter the Kentucky Derby, well, I'd like him to be on the lead. I'd like him to go in 24 for the first quarter and maybe, you know, 48 or I don't remember what the fractions were, but something like that, 48 in the, you know, and then open up coming home. Yeah, wow. Have a nice little blowout, 3/8 blowout through the lane as you're drawing off. What a great way to go to Kentucky. So, yeah, he's a dangerous horse.
You know, should mention, too, you know, yesterday they closed out the Derby future, the last of the Derby futures, and you talk about who might go favored, and Roadster, Hammer, on that topic, Roadster ended up 6-1 when they closed out at 6 o'clock last night. You also had, interestingly, four others in single digits. Game Winner 7-1, Improbable 8-1, Maximum Security 7-1, and Tacitus 8-1, and Omaha Beach 10-1. So I don't know if we're going to end up with the Harlan's Holiday type Derby, 9-2 or whatever it was, and most recently you had the highest, right? You had the next highest priced favorite as we've gone through this run of favorites. But clearly, if Omaha Beach or Improbable or even Galilean was 53-1 last night when it closed. So if Galilean should happen to run a big race at Arkansas, he'd be a well valued in this final pool. But you look at that, Johnny, six horses between 6-1 and 10-1, that tells you that the public is just as muddled about this group as anybody else is. We are.
I don't see how they couldn't be.
They'd be more muddled after the Arkansas Derby, right? But I don't see a horse going to be below 5-2, 3-1. Do you lose the favorite? Not even close.
Unless Omaha Beach or Improbable win smashingly.
Even still.
Well, and you know, the thing with Maximum Security, and it's funny, we used War Emblem, and I can always remember Andy Beyer after the 2002 Derby saying it was right there, the triple digit buyers that War Emblem had posted, and he said, I completely ignored them, and Maximum Security is the only horse with triple digit figs, right? I mean, there's nobody else that's run 100 pluses, and you know, you look at, you know, the Derby, I mean, somebody's got to run a 100 to 106, give or take 108 to win, and typically. So the fact is we've been waiting. We thought that the mile and an eighth, Johnny, would be the dividing mark, and we might see some horses that took the next logical step, you know, going an authentic route of ground, and we're still kind of waiting. I mean, the figures here, you had a 98 from Roadster and 97 from Game Winner, and you had, who else, 97 from Tacitus and a 94 from Vacoma for the winning figs from the weekend.
Yeah, what we have is what we don't have is separation. We have no separation. Everybody is, you know, they're running creditable races, and they look good doing it, most of them. I mean, if you look at Tacitus, it seems like when you look at each horse, something is a pebble in your shoe. Like, for each horse, I mean, you look at Tacitus and you think, Well, he lugs in. He was lugging in, and he's kind of drifting in the whole way through the stretch. And
yeah, he was.
You know, you can't get away with that when you step up to the Kentucky Derby. You're not going to be able to get away with that kind of behavior. You look at Vekoma, and you see that crazy. I mean, he ran a nice race. I mean, you can't knock the race he ran. I'll tell you one thing I noticed after the race, he was blowing very hard after the race. I'm sure that race did him a lot of good. I'm sorry, take that back. Tacitus is the one that was blowing. Tacitus was blowing hard after the race. Vekoma, you've got that rough action which you talked to earlier this morning, George Weaver, about it, and Weaver said, yeah, well, we just, you know, that's the way he does it, and that's fine. He goes, but you look at that and you think he's going to win the Kentucky Derby. That's not what a Derby winner looks like. Okay, so you can't. There's your pebble in the shoe with him. Plus Kip Parfait. You're not going to come from Dubai. The next horse that comes from Dubai and wins the Kentucky Derby is going to be the first. It's, you know, and I'm not going to live to see it. It's just, it's too much. I'm just going to come out. It's too much. It's asking too much. Then you go down to Roadster, and you say, well, he's going to need the pace. Now, the pebble in my shoe there, he had a throat operation. Sometimes that throat operation works the first couple times, and then it doesn't. You know, it reverts. So that's kind of lingering in the back of my skull. But maybe I'm thinking too much about that. He ran fine. Anyway, my point is, as you go down the list, it's like everyone. You get the code of honor and you say, he needs pace. And he didn't really kick it in the other day. And everyone you get to, you know, War of Will. Well, he had that little hiccup, and I don't like hiccups. And it's like you've got a pebble in your shoe as you go down the list. So you got to find the one where there's no pebble in your shoe. And you got to break the leg.
It might prove, yeah, might exactly. And you know, you mentioned Pliskep Parfait. Want to send out sincere and deepest sympathies to Brendan Walsh, who lost his dad over the weekend, and his father, as Brendan wrote to me, one of the great, really a great thrill to see his son. Win in Dubai, and thoughts with Brendan and his extended family. And it just so happens that his dad was at Saratoga this past summer, and Brendan, there, I was presenting a trophy for a small stake, and I forget which of the Walsh horses won, but his dad was in the picture. So I've got a picture with his father, and just like Brendan, he looks just like him, and the same animation. And I wanted to make sure that, you know, everybody knew, and you can extend sympathies to Brendan, Bren P. Walsh. On Twitter, and I know he'll appreciate it. So I wanted to slip that in since you brought up this.
Yeah, what a great move taking that horse over to win that race. That's called picking your spot and training him up to it and getting him ready. That was just so well done,
Johnny. We're on the doorstep. We're getting close, and off to Arkansas this week, and we'll got the Lexington. We're going to see what Blaine Wright's going to do, but some egg breaking is going to be necessary, as you like to say, and we'll start doing it in earnest when we talk next week.
I'm looking forward to it, Hammer. I've enjoyed your co-piloting. You've done an outstanding job.
Well, thank you. He's tough to keep up with. Jeez.
Man, he's an animal. He's an animal.
Jeez.
Yeah. That's the people. I think you're going to drag him kicking and screaming to the airport. I think he kind of likes that California vibe.
Well, you're right about that. I wouldn't be surprised to get the phone call. You know, that I was late to the airport. I missed my flight.
It's not hard if you're in and out of LAX to get derailed.
I thought about it the other day, and I said to myself, you know what, though? The man would never be able to surrender Saratoga. He wouldn't know what to do with himself.
I don't know. I've harassed Tina about this, and she says we can't do it because we got the boys back in Rochester and in the city, and she's got 7 more years of school, and I no matter how many times I say to her we could live here, she gives me an argument. To do the show from right where we're sitting on a daily basis would be unbelievable. I would do it in a minute. Of course, it does require being up every morning at 3:30, but that's all right. That would be a sacrifice worth making, like you did, Johnny, for all those years coming out here.
It's a beautiful place, and I just, with all the news and all the things going on, and everyone's aware of everything, I just hope that, man, I hope and pray that everything can get fixed.
Well, we certainly took steps in the right direction Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. This was a very good weekend for everything here and for the industry at large. Johnny, thanks. Talk next week.
See you down the road.
Adios.
We'll see you somewhere. You know that.
Johnny D, everybody. Let's take a break. Hour 3 coming up. Bob Baffert, as soon as his horses work, and Joe Orsino just got off a plane, and we'll have Joe join us to talk about what is clearly the most emergent turf sprinter out there, Imprimis, from the Shakertown. I wanted Hammer, longtime friend of Joe O's, to get a chance to have him on. Back after this to Santa Anita.
Latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up with ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. RaceLens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Equibase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats RaceLens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/RaceLens.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.